we're going to devote the entire program to what is arguably William Shakespeare's greatest work, his majestic tragedy, Hamlet, Prince of Denmark. This is Shakespeare's work at its most powerful.
Compelling.
Look, I know what powerful means.
I'm sorry.
Strong, dynamic, emotional. Now we're going to be featuring recorded performance, audio reports, a special studio guest, and sharing.
And we'd like to dedicate this episode of the Reduced Shakespeare Radio Show to President Bill Clinton, because whereas Hamlet covered the throne of Denmark in blood, Clinton filled the White House with gore.
And here at the top of the show, we'd like to give you this episode's sound effect of the week. Listen carefully.
Nice choice, Reed. Very tasteful.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Let's get the program underway, shall we?
Okay, good idea, Reed. But where do you begin with what is probably the greatest play ever written in the English language?
I don't know.
Well, Adam, you've been working pretty exhaustively on the text of Hamlet.
Yes, I have.
I think it would be safe to say that you're something of an expert on the subject.
Yes, I am.
Why don't you share with us your insights about the melancholy Dane?
Yes, I will. Okay, well, Hamlet, the way I see it, is the story of three sons, right? Okay, there are these three sons who are trying to avenge their father. There's Hamlet, Laertes, and Fortinbras. Hamlet is all thought and no action. Laertes is all action and no thought. And Fortinbras is the perfect balance, right? He amasses an army, then he waits for the right minute, and then at the end he just walks right into Elsinore and stands over the corpses of Hamlet and Laertes.
That's actually a very thoughtful analysis.
You see, if you look at it that way, then you could say that Hamlet, Laertes, and Fortinbras are like Moe, Larry, and Curly. Because Moe is Hamlet, he's like the thinking man, right? Curly's Laertes, because he's always getting hit by Moe. And Fortinbras is like Larry, because nothing bad really ever happens to Larry, except maybe he gets his hair pulled.
Well, what exactly does that mean?
Well, I think, Austin, that what Shakespeare is trying to say is that Larry will be remembered as the greatest stooge because he was the balanced one, the stooge in the middle.
That's very zen.
Zen dog dreams of a medium-sized bone.
So then, Adam, do you accept the theory put forth by Freud's disciple Ernest Jones that 300 years before modern psychiatry, Shakespeare wrote Hamlet as a dramatization of man's Oedipal complex?
Absolutely, Austin, totally. The whole play is Hamlet's Oedipal nightmare.
Really?
Yeah, just look at all the food references.
Well, wait a minute.
I got this computer to spit out all the references to food in Shakespeare's work, and most of them are from Hamlet. You can see there's a heavy food influence.
No, Adam, I didn't say Oedipal, I said Oedipal.
What?
Oedipal, not edible.
What's the difference?
Not food. Sleeping with your mother.
That's gross.
Well, how does this expand our knowledge of Hamlet?
Like this, smart guy. In Hamlet's famous speech, does he say, oh, that this too solid flesh, or oh, too sullied flesh?
Well, no one knows. It's unclear in the original folio.
Well, if you examine the text from the point of view of food, it becomes quite clear. Hamlet is saying, oh, that this too salad fresh.
My God, Adam, I think you have a point.
Oh, does it show?
Yeah, just a little. Pull your hat down.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fine. No, I think you're right, though. It all becomes clear.
Thank you.
And that must be what something is rotten in the state of Denmark refers to.
Exactly. And I've learned that Shakespeare was using Hamlet to send subliminal messages.
Really?
Yes. Listen to this tape of the Rogan peasant slave speech.
Okay.
Oh, what a rogue and peasant slave am I. Is it not monstrous that this player here, but in a fiction, in a dream of passion, could force his soul so to his whole conceit that from her working all his visage wand, tears in his eyes, distraction in his aspect, a broken voice in his whole function suiting with forms to his conceit, and all for nothing, for Hecuba? What's Hecuba to him, or he to Hecuba, that he should weep for her?
Well, that sounds innocent enough to me.
Yeah, but now listen to it backwards. Rick, roll the tape.
Creamy and delicious.
Did you hear it?
That's shocking, Adam, I confess.
Oh,
that's
yeah,
completely
gives me the shingles.
Well, do you want to tell us anything else about Hamlet?
Well, it's not kosher.
Not kosher? What do you mean by that?
Well, presumably because of the ham in Hamlet.
Oh, right, okay. That's
exactly,
true.
And what's the first thing Hamlet says when he sees the ghost of his father? He says, I shall think meat. Boom! There's your smoking gun, my friend. The play is about food, man.
Okay.
But enough about me and my wacky theories. How about you, Austin? I'm sure you've got a few things to say on the subject.
Well, I'm sure it's not as interesting as the food stuff, but, what impresses me most about Shakespeare's work, particularly Hamlet, is the universality of its themes. They've not only proven to be timeless, but they've also managed to transcend cultural barriers as well. Akira Kurosawa based his film Throne of Blood on the story of Macbeth, which everybody knows, but very few people know that he made a Japanese version of Hamlet called The Dane of Destruction.
Wow. Doubly, oh no doubly, ton
Shiromu Funi.
Subaru, Ghosta, Hammerhead's father.
Sony tape player, you dirty rat, you kill my father's hand. How about you?
Godzilla!
Now, Adam, speaking of film versions of Hamlet, remember that one a few years ago with Mel Gibson?
Was that the one with Tina Turner in it?
No, you're thinking of Mad Max 3.
Oh, yeah, Beyond Thunderdome. Yeah. That was the one where Tina had to be rescued from Ike because he kept hitting her till she went,
That's What's Love Got to Do with It.
Mel Gibson was in What's Love Got to Do with It?
Well, no, I didn't say that. No, he wasn't. He was Phil Spector, okay?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about Mel Gibson's other great performance in Hamlet.
Oh, the Zeffirelli film.
Exactly. Now, remember who played Ophelia?
Helena Bonham Carter.
That's right, Helena Bonham Carter. And you like her, don't you?
Well, yeah, kinda.
Well, Adam, this is your lucky day.
No.
That's right, because it just so happens that our special guest here in the studio today...
No!
Yes, is that lovely little lady, star of cosmetic advertisements, merchandisery films, and Adam Long's dreams.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, please give a nice round warm of applause to the beautiful Miss Helena Bonham Carter. Welcome to the program, Miss Carter.
Well, thank you very much, Austin. And please, just call me Helena Bonham.
Thank you, Helena Bonham. Adam, would you like to say hello to our guest? Adam? He's gone shy on us. Adam, get out from under there.
He's a squirrely little devil, isn't he?
Yes, he is. But let's just get on with the interview. He'll come out eventually.
That should be quite a shock to his wife.
Undoubtedly. Now, Helena Bonham, I'm sure our audience would like to know when you first became interested in Shakespeare.
Well, I think that would be even as a little girl, because my mommy would tell me Shakespearean bedtime stories.
Shakespearean bedtime stories, really?
Yeah, well, she'd tell me Macbeth.
Macbeth? Your mother told you Macbeth as a bedtime story?
Oh, yeah, and I loved it. All that stuff about poison entrails and out damn spot. Who would have thought the old man had so much blood in him? I loved stuff like that.
When did you decide that you were going to be an actress?
That would be when I saw Barbara Streisand in A Star Is Born.
That inspired you, did it?
Well, I sure liked what she wore.
So you grew up on Shakespeare and had dreams of being a movie star. I imagine that working on Hamlet with Franco Zeffirelli and Mel Gibson was like a dream come true for you, huh?
Well, it didn't suck, and I especially liked working with Tina Turner.
Don't start that again. Now, Helena Bonham, I have to say that you look much different in person than you do on the screen.
That would be correct.
On screen, we generally see you in period costumes, and you appear to be a petite young woman with auburn hair. That's not at all how you come across here in the studio. Would you mind describing yourself to the people at home?
Of course. Well, I'm wearing spiked heels and black leather. I'm 6'2" tall, and I'm completely bald.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. That's because Helena Bonham is not actually Helena Bonham Carter, but our own Reed Martin professional impressionist.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I thought something was weird.
Well, Reed, you sure took everybody in.
Thank you. I know I definitely took an Adam because he was feeling my thigh under the table.
I wasn't feeling your thigh.
You were.
No, I wasn't, man. Besides, I knew you weren't Helena Bonham Carter. I was just playing along.
And I'm grateful for it.
Reed, tell us how you got to be a professional impressionist.
Well, performing runs in my family, Austin. My father taught us all to do impressions when we were 4, fire eating at age 5, and accordion at 8.
Accordion? Well, I happened to notice, Reed, that you brought your accordion with you.
Mm-hmm.
Would you honor us with a tune?
I'd be delighted. In fact, I was hoping you'd ask.
I thought you were.
It's over here in the corner.
All right.
Oh, all right.
Good. Oh, whoa. Do you need some help?
Hold on.
No, I'm okay. Hang on.
That's a big one, huh?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay.
You ready?
Here we go. Ready?
Take it away.
Okay.
Yeah, beer barrel.
Excellent.
Yes,
ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Reed Martin, professional impressionist, playing his version of the Beer Barrel Polka here on KWLK, all accordion all the time, a 1 and a 2 on your radio dial.
Woo! Yeah. You know, Austin, I've always said that accordion means party.
It absolutely does. He's pretty good.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Reed, did you say you learned the accordion at 8?
That's right, Adam. Accordion at 8, fire eating at 5, professional impressionist at age 4.
Fire eating?
That's right, Adam. Fire eating at age 5.
Whoa, cool. Could you do some fire eating for us right now?
Sure, Adam. Austin, if I could have a drum roll, please.
Okay. Reed is now holding a lit torch in his hand. He's tilting his head back.
We should warn any children listening that fire eating may sound easy, but actually it's very difficult and very dangerous.
That's right. Reed is a trained professional. Do not try this at home.
Go over to a friend's house. It's much safer that way.
And now Reed is opening his mouth. He's moving the torch closer and...
Ah! I'd just like to say how proud I am to have worked with a professional like Reed Martin.
Me too.
William Shakespeare's Hamlet is a play that deals with political and military power struggles, a concept of particular resonance to us in the 20th century. Ever since the Second World War, we...
Oh, no!
What is it?
The machine ate my tape again. That thing never works right.
Well, sometimes
man.
If you just hit these things.
Yeah, you gotta hit it. See, that was supposed to be my recorded report on Hamlet's relationship to power struggles of the 20th century.
Shakespeare was born in 1564 in the town of Stratford-upon-Avon, Warwickshire. The third of eight children, he was the eldest son of John Shakespeare, a locally prominent merchant, and Mary Arden, daughter of a Roman, a Catholic member of the landed gentry. Shakespeare arrived in London in 1588. By 1592, he had achieved success as an actor and a playwright. After 1608, his dramatic productions lessened, and it seems that he spent more time in Stratford. There, he dictated to his secretary, Rudolf Hess, the work Mein Kampf, in which he outlined his program for the restoration of Germany to a dominant position in Europe. After reoccupying the Rhineland zone between France and Germany and annexing Austria, the Sudetenland, and the remainder of Czechoslovakia, Shakespeare invaded Poland, thus precipitating World War II. Shakespeare remained in Berlin when the Russians entered the city and committed suicide with his mistress, Eva Peron. He lies buried in the church at Stratford. Thank you.
Well, that was a total loss.
You're telling me that didn't have anything to do with Shakespeare. Eva Peron is from that Andrew Lloyd Webber musical.
Reed?
Yeah?
No, Evita.
How's your face?
It's much better, thank you.
Great. Well, Adam, since we had the technical problems with the tape, maybe we could take a minute here to just chat, and you can tell us what you know about the life of William Shakespeare.
About the life of William Shakespeare?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, Shakespeare. Okay, he was born in England, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he came from a very artistic family, I think. In fact, I think it was his older brother who taught him to read at a very early age.
Oh, yeah. What was his oldest brother's name again?
Shakespeare.
No, I mean his first name.
That was his first name, right? His name was Shakespeare.
Really?
Shakespeare was a very well-known minstrel in Stratford. That was Shakespeare's oldest brother. And his second oldest brother was a jazz musician, I think.
Wait a minute, a jazz musician? That doesn't make sense.
He improvised on the zither, and his name was Moody Shakespeare.
Is that like
Moody? Yeah. And
I haven't heard of any of this, no.
Well, Moody was a big influence on William Shakespeare, and Moody was the first one who taught Shakespeare to wear his hair long, and then later, and this is a little-known fact, when Shakespeare went bald on top, he always wore a hat, and his nickname was The Hat.
The Hat.
It was. They called him Willie the Hat Shakespeare.
Oh, sure. Uh-huh. I read that everywhere.
Yeah,
really?
And I've seen it in woodcuttings, too,
because
I do a lot of research on this stuff.
Yeah.
And so anyway, Willie the Hat Shakespeare went to London, and he was very cool, and the rest is history.
So let me see if I have this straight.
Okay.
William Shakespeare was actually known as Willie the Hat Shakespeare.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And he learned to wear his hair long from his brother, Moody.
His mother's name was Elvira Shakespeare.
Elvira.
I've seen her on Halloween and stuff.
That's right. She hosts that movie program.
Yeah.
And Moody Shakespeare was a jazz musician.
As a jazz musician,
all right.
Yes.
And he was taught to read by his eldest brother, Shakespeare, the minstrel?
In the woodcuttings, and the rest is history.
Huh. I think we might all be getting just a little highfalutin here.
Highfalutin?
Yeah, I think we need the opinion of an average guy. Reed, you're an average guy.
Oh, man, does it show?
Well, just a little bit. Pull your shirt down.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How's that?
Oh, that's better.
Okay.
That's much better. Now, but as an average guy, what do you think Hamlet's about?
Well, I think we're making a simple play very, very complicated.
A simple play? What do you mean by that? Defend that statement.
Well, I think first and foremost, Hamlet is just a good old-fashioned ghost story.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
A ghost story? A ghost story? Hey, Reed's right. Hamlet is definitely the greatest ghost story of all time. You know, the kind that grown-ups tell the little kids when they're camping out to scare the crap out of them and make the youngsters grow up to be axe murderers. Why, I remember my scout leader telling a ghost story on a campout that was so scary, I wet the bed. And how can you explain that to the other kids? But I digress. A ghost story. Yes, Hamlet is a ghost story, but it's also big. Really big. It's got so many words.
Adam, what are you doing?
Sorry, I was just inside my head.
Yeah, you did get kind of small there for a minute.
Listen, guys, I've got an idea. Let's do Hamlet as a ghost story, but let's also do it fast.
Fast and scary?
Yeah!
I love it. It's wacky. It's crazy. It just might work.
The Reduced Shakespeare Company presents Hamlet, the tragedy of the Prince of Denmark. The place, Denmark. The time, standard 4-4. The battlements of Elsinore Castle, round about midnight. Fast and scary. Two guards enter.
Who's there?
Nay, answer me! Stand up and fold yourself!
Long live the king!
Bernardo!
He... Now struck 12. Get thee to bed, Horatio.
For this relief, much thanks. Peace, break thee off. Look where it comes.
Looks the ghost not like the king?
Aye, the ghost is very like the late King Casper.
Speak to it, Horatio.
What art thou? By heaven, I charge thee, speak. Tis gone.
'Twas about to speak when the cock crew.
Break we our watch up, and by my advice, let us impart what we have seen tonight unto
Hamlet, Prince of Denmark.
Hi, kids. This is us back in the studio. We were afraid that some of you youngsters in our listening audience might have been frightened by the ghost of Hamlet's father.
That's right, and we wanted to reassure any children listening that ghosts are, in fact, very real, very scary, and very dangerous.
That's right, and right now the ghost is hiding under your bed, so you better look out.
Oh, that this tutu solid flesh should melt, thaw, and resolve itself into a dew.
Hail to your lordship.
Horatio, methinks I see my father.
My lord, I think I saw him yesternight.
But where was this?
Upon the platform where we watched.
'Tis very strange. I will watch tonight, perchance 'twill walk again. All is not well, Horatio. Would the night were come. Oh, the wind bites shrewdly. It is very cold.
Look, my lord, it comes!
Angels and ministers of grace, defend us. Something is rotten in the state of Denmark.
Mark me.
Speak, I am bound to hear.
Sought out revenge when thou shalt hear, if ever thou didst thy dear father love. Revenge is foul and most unnatural. Murther!
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 For the serpent that did sting thy father's life now wears his crown.
My uncle!
Your uncle!
Let not the royal bed of Denmark become a couch for incest.
Insects!
A couch!
Adieu, Hamlet, adieu.
Lord Hamlet, this is wondrous strange.
There are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophy. Ghoulies and ghosties and long-legged beasties, banshees and bogies and evil phantasms, phantoms, illusions, poltergeists, ghouls, shadows and specters and spirits who drool, demons and devils and witches and freaks, vampires, monsters and ogres.
We interrupt this program for the following disclaimer. The BBC and the Reduced Shakespeare Company deny any relationship with or endorsement of Beelzebub, Old Scratch, Mephistopheles, the Antichrist, or any of the names by which our Father in Heaven's nemesis, the Devil, is known. We do not sanction satanic worship, and any implied support of Lucifer is expressly disavowed. The BBC and the RSC stand firmly behind sweetness and goodness and light, and rainbows and puppy dogs and bouquets, and happiness and truth and one...
Follow me, my evil warriors! I demand your obedience, you hear my words. Go forth and commit the following acts of worship. Wear bell bottoms. Subscribe to email. Listen to the Carpenters. Give generously to the arts. Watch the original Star Trek. Vote Democrat and clean your rooms. The Dark Lord commands it.
And faith and hope and charity and love and sweetness. Did I say sweetness and beauty and all the other positive Judeo-Christian values? Well, mostly Christian values, but you know what we mean. We now return you to Hamlet, the
Dark Prince
of Denmark.
Neither a borrower nor a lender be.
How
now, Ophelia? What's the matter?
Closet. Lord Hamlet, with no hat upon his head, pale as his shirt, his knees knocking together with looks so piteous and proportionate, have been loosened out of hell to speak of horrors. He comes before me.
Ooh.
I have found the cause of Hamlet's lunacy, and since brevity is the soul of wit, I shall be brief. He is mad! Look to where the poor wretch comes raging! Away! Away, I do beseech you! How does my good lord Hamlet?
Well, God of mercy, well!
What do you read, my lord?
Words, words, words!
Though this be madness, yet there's a method in it.
They are the players here.
Oh, the actors are come hither, my lord!
What actors are these?
Oh, the best actors in the world for either tragedy, comedy, history, pastoral, pastorical, historical, comical, historical, pastoral, tragical, historical...
Pastorical? I don't know what that means. I'll have these players play something like the murder of my father before mine uncle. I'll observe his looks. If he do but blench, I'll know my course. The play's the thing wherein I'll catch the conscience of the king!
Our farcical bordello Donner kebab with dramatic overtones.
To be or not to be, that is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against a sea of troubles and by opposing end them. To die, to sleep, perchance to nap, dream, and ere long the nightmare comes. The one where you watch your parents make love, sweaty and entangled and besmirched, and you run and hide, but it's no use because your mother runs after you and finds you in your secret hiding place, and she stands above you, your mother, standing there with eyes like carbuncles, and she calms you down and soothes you and massages your back. Aye, there's the rub.
It's audio footnote time.
At this point in the play, Claudius sends Hamlet off to England with his schoolmates Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. It should be apparent to anyone who has either A, traveled on a bus full of students, or B, attempted to follow road signs in England, just what a heartless monster Claudius is to subject his stepson to these tortures.
That was audio footnote time.
And now the famous play-within-a-play scene, in which Hamlet discovers conclusively that his uncle murdered his father.
Speak the speech, I pray you, as I pronounced it to you, trippingly on the tongue. Oh, how now, my lord? Will the king hear this piece of work?
Aye, and the queen too, presently.
How fares our cousin Hamlet?
Excellent a faith of the chameleon's dish.
Come hither, my good Hamlet, sit by me.
No, good mother, here's metal more attractive.
And now, my lords and ladies, the King's players are proud to present that very popular Italian tragedy, The Murder of Gonzago.
Oh, Mr. Lucianus!
That's the way you do it! Oh, you dropped poison in my ear!
Give her the play! Give her the play! Lights! Away! Away! Away!
I'll take the ghost's word for £1,000. Now, mother, what's the matter?
Hamlet, thou hast thy father much offended.
Mother, you have my father much offended.
Oh, what wilt thou do? Thou wilt not murder me!
Help!
A rat! Dead for a ducat! Dead!
Now, Hamlet, where's Polonius?
At supper.
At supper where?
Not where he eats, but where he is eaten.
Oh, no!
It's Laertes!
Oh, thou vile king, where is my father?
Dead.
How came he dead? I'll be revenged for my father.
Your sister's drowned, Laertes.
Drowned? Oh, where?
In the water, you moron.
Lay her in the earth.
Sweet to the sweet.
What is he whose grief bears such an emphasis? This is I, Omelette the Cheese Danish.
The devil take thy soul.
Give us the foils.
Come one for me.
Now be careful, those are sharp.
Come, sir.
Come, my lord.
Okay, foils the weapons of choice today. Hamlet is coming out strong with a couple of muscular lunges, but Laertes is right there with two parries and a Masonic handshake. Oh, and it looks like Hamlet is drawing blood. Laertes is angry now, but... Oh, my! It looks like Hamlet has skewered his pancreas. Yes, Laertes is bleeding. He's winded. He's about to... Oh, my God! With lightning speed, Laertes whips out his soda can and flings it at the melancholy Dane. That definitely impacted in the scrotal region. That's gotta hurt. Now, they're both staggering. Hamlet disarms Laertes. The queen is spewing blood. Oh, and Hamlet is putting on his mother's dress and wig, picking up a large butcher knife and chasing Claudius up to the attic. It's down to just the two of them now.
Treason! Treason!
You killed my father and slept with my mother. That's my job!
Defend me, friend!
None shall save thee, thou murderous, incestuous, damned Help! Dane!
Help!
In Denmark, Help! No one can hear you scream. Follow my mother!
Oh, and with a single sweep of the chainsaw, Hamlet decapitates the king. It looks like it's all over now, except for the closing speeches.
Forgive me, Hamlet. I am justly killed by mine own treachery.
Heaven make thee free of it. I follow thee. The rest is silence.
Good night, sweet prince, and flights of angels sing thee to thy rest.
Tis I, Fortinbras, what means this carnage?
Let me speak to the yet unknowing world how these things came about. So shall you hear of carnal, bloody, and unnatural acts, of accidental judgments, casual slaughters. And look, a comet sails o'er the heavens, casting this devastation in a supernatural glow.
Look, Horatio, the dead rise.
My lord Hamlet, let me give you a hand.
Oh my God, he ate my hand!
Messenger, run away and tell the world of these events in Denmark on this night of the living bard.
Well, that bell means we're approaching the end of the program, and for my money, not a moment too soon. But before we close this episode, maybe we should mention what we've all learned today.
I learned that drinking and fire eating don't mix.
I learned that William Shakespeare stole everything he wrote from Stephen King.
And I learned not to feel Helena Bonham Carter's thigh unless I'm sure she's not Reed.
Well, it's really been quite an episode, hasn't it?
You can say that again.
Wow, it's really been quite an episode, hasn't it?
Stop it, Reed! Stop it! I'm going to kill you next time! No, listen, seriously, folks, we've just a few minutes left, so we're going to attempt to break the world record for the fastest ever performance of Hamlet. You guys want to get ready?
Yes, absolutely. Okay.
Now, the record is held by a Norwegian company that performed Hamlet in 2.5 minutes. My records show that there was also an East German company that performed it in 53 seconds, but their Ophelia tested positive for steroids and was disqualified. Okay, everybody, we're all greased up. We've moved the furniture back. Props and costumes ready. Reed, any last words before the attempt?
Yes, I'd just like to thank the Battersea Burn Unit for their outstanding work.
Good, Adam.
Stick it in a camel and let's get going.
All righty, the clock is ready, the actors are prepared. Ready, set, go. Oh, that this too solid flesh would melt.
My lord, I think I saw your father yesternight.
Would the night were come.
Night.
Mark me.
Something is rotten in the state of Denmark.
Revenge my mother.
My lord, this is strange.
There are more things in heaven and earth, so piss off. To be or not to be, that is the question.
Get, my lord.
Get thee to a nunnery. Speak the speech trippingly on the tongue.
Before the play.
I'll take the ghost's word for £1,000. And now, mother, what's the matter?
I will not murder me.
Help, help, help!
Oh, no, a rat! Dead for a ducat, dead!
Now, Hamlet, where's Polonius?
At supper.
Where's my father?
Dead!
Sweet Ophelia!
Alas, poor York, but soft, here comes the queen!
Lay her in the earth!
Sweets to the sweet!
Hold off the earth a while!
It's high, omelet, the cheese, Danish!
The devil take thy soul!
Give us the foils!
One for me! Oh, I am slain!
Oh, I am poisoned!
I follow thee, the rest is silence! Time? 41 seconds! Yes!
Yes, it's a new world record, ladies and gentlemen. The crowd is rushing onto the field like a massive, roaring, single-celled amoeba of joy. This is history in the making. The players are being held aloft. The air is positively humming with the music of zithers and Gregorian chants. Babies are being tossed in the air by commemorative baby-tossing machines. Everyone is positively inflated with glee and proud to be vertebrates. We have seen the enemy, and he has wet himself. Oh, the humanity!
Now cracks a noble heart. Good night, sweet prince, and flights of angels sing thee to thy rest. Why does the drum come hither?
The sight is dismal, and our affairs from England come too late. The ears are senseless that should give us hearing to tell him his commandment is fulfilled, that Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead.
Let four captains bear Hamlet like a soldier to the stage, for he was likely, had he been put on, to have proved most royally. Go, bid the soldiers shoot.